All right. Are we ready to go, everyone? Everyone's ready to go? We tested everyone's connection to make sure we can hear everyone.
Can you hear me, Your Honor?
Yes.
Good morning, Your Honors. Can you hear me?
Yes, thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay, everyone, welcome. Good morning to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. Today is December 14, 2022. We have five cases on our calendar this morning. This is our second of those five cases, A220371 Gomez versus State of Minnesota. Counsel, you will each have 15 minutes for your primary argument. The appellant has an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. Your time is on the screen. Please pay attention to that clock. The marshal is showing the running clock of time. I'd ask that you identify yourself and your client before you begin speaking and let us know if there's a particular way you'd like us to reference you. I'd ask that you mute your microphone when you are not speaking. And with that, counsel, you may proceed.
Thank you, Your Honor. Luke DeLeon on behalf of Appellant Justin Lee Gomez. May it please the court. On September 2nd, 2019, appellant was searched after State Trooper Nicholas Otterson observed an open bottle of vodka resting next to the center console of his parked car. Rather than limiting the subsequent search to further evidence of open containers, Trooper Otterson used the presence of an open container as a pretext to conduct an intrusive and unrelated search for illegal drugs. Trooper Otterson then used the facts he learned from that search to reverse engineer his testimony years after the fact to create a post hoc justification for that search. The Fourth Amendment demands that police officers follow the rules, and Trooper Otterson's search was not limited to gathering further evidence of open containers. He did not have a right to hunt for drugs, and his canine unit should have never been let out of the car. The district court's decision to deny the appellant's motion to suppress was fundamentally flawed in three interrelated ways. First, the district court failed to recognize the pretextual nature of Trooper Otterson's search rendered his search constitutionally unreasonable. Trooper Otterson's search was Mr. unreasonable Mr. DeLeon, because it was not narrowly. Yes, Your Honor.
Can I ask you on that point, when you say failed to recognize, isn't it true that part of the difficulty in for a trial judge and then also for, of course, our court to review a record is a pretext is inherently a subjective analysis, and then it might derive from a district court's findings, credibility findings, whereas we look at objectively in our review of the record, as did the district court, and look at all the circumstances so that at an appellate level, I'm trying to understand how in this record we essentially would be trying, it seems, again, and making a finding of a pretext as opposed to reviewing the district court's findings and based on the record, which seems to, at least implicitly, but if not directly, found a objective under the totality basis to expand the seizure or the stop. Am I accurately summarizing the law, at least in terms of how we would review in this record?
Your Honor, you are accurately summarizing the law, but I do believe that there is sufficient objective evidence in the record to prove that he had a subjective pretext. And I would point, Your Honor, to 1320 in the video where he says, "We've got an open bottle and I'm going to search based on that, but I'm going to have my dog just sniff to see if he goes to that glove box." That to me is evidence of pretext. And then if you go to the trial transcript, he says, "I explained to Mr. Gomez, I'm going to be searching his vehicle for further alcoholic beverages. My plan is to use my canine to sniff the vehicle as well."
I mean, the problem that I have, Mr. DeLeon, is that when I look at the issues that were raised below in the motion to suppress, pretext is not among them. Probable cause for the dog to sniff the vehicle is not among them. And I don't know how we can sit in judgment on this record when the state didn't have an opportunity to present evidence or elicit testimony that would be relevant to whether the officer's search of the vehicle was pretextual or whether the dog there was some reason for the dog to enter the vehicle that would give the officer probable cause, you know, that was sustained by probable cause. So what do we do with the fact that these issues were forfeited?
Your Honor, I don't believe that these issues were forfeited because I believe these were necessarily brought up in the questioning by the trial counsel, specifically about the use of the drug sniffing dog in that search. The trial counsel may not have explicitly stated pretext, but it was clear from the line of questioning related to the use of the dog, including the specific question around whether the dog could smell for alcohol, that trial counsel was eliciting that sort of testimony to support this theory. And then,
They do have to elicit some testimony that would support reasonable articulable suspicion for the dog to conduct a search on the exterior of the vehicle, which was an issue that was preserved below. But that's not the same as probable cause for the dog to enter the vehicle, assuming that that is the standard. And by way of example, counsel, one of the things that the officer testified to was that the dog alerted outside of the vehicle before it entered the vehicle. And the district court did not make a finding with respect to whether that actually was a credible determination. And that is relevant to a probable cause determination. And without that credibility finding, I don't know how we can review that issue.
Your Honor, I would agree to the extent that I believe there was no direct finding about the dog. There was no explicit factual finding that the dog alerted outside of the vehicle, or there was that finding. But I think the objective review of the dash cam footage doesn't show that. And if Your Honor believes that there should be further testimony on that, it could reverse and send this back for an evidentiary hearing on that fact. The evidence that is in the trial court record is directly contradicted by the video, the dash cam footage. And I think this is what is the important issue, is noticing that the district court reversed. Sorry, let me gather my thoughts, Your Honor. The district court relied on the testimony of Trooper Otterson, despite the multiple inconsistencies with the dash cam footage. For example, he says he lets the dog out of the car and the dog immediately starts pulling towards the open door. But then a review of the dash cam footage shows that the dog goes towards the rear of the vehicle. And there's multiple instances where the circumstances that Trooper Otterson was relying on and testifying to the Supreme Court were simply just not, or to the district court, were simply not supported by the dash cam footage.
So I don't go ahead, Judge Smith.
How far do you feel the police could go in looking for alcohol in the car once they've discovered one bottle of alcohol?
Once they've discovered one bottle of alcohol, Your Honor, the officers were entitled to search any compartment of the vehicle that could contain other evidence of alcohol.
Isn't the glove compartment one of those places where alcohol could be hidden?
It is, Your Honor. But I believe that the fundamental difference here is that the officer didn't go and search for that. He searched for drugs and he used the drug sniffing dog to do so.
But does that make a difference if he's entitled to look into the glove compartment anyway?
Your Honor, I'm sorry.
If he's entitled to look in the glove compartment in any event, what difference does it make?
I mean, the difference, Your Honor, is that the Fourth Amendment requires that police officers follow certain steps and procedures when conducting their searches. And it's not reasonable just because you have probable cause of one type of evidence to go and then search for a completely unrelated type of evidence based on the probable cause of that.
But if he was looking for alcohol, he could have gone in the glove compartment, right?
That is correct, Your Honor.
So he's entitled to go in the glove compartment anyway.
That is correct, Your Honor. But again, the unreasonableness of the search comes from the deployment of the drug sniffing dog. The dog should have never gotten out of the car because he didn't have subsequent probable cause to conduct that search.
But I guess that's my question is, if he's entitled to go in the glove compartment anyway, what difference does it make whether he uses a drug sniffing dog or he uses just goes into the glove compartment?
Well, the difference, Your Honor, is that the drug sniffing dog, using a drug sniffing dog within the interior of the vehicle is what renders the search unreasonable. I understand Your Honor's concern that as a matter of fact or as a matter of law, he was entitled to search the compartment, but the fact that he used a drug sniffing dog is what renders this search unreasonable because he's conducting a trespassory search within the interior of the vehicle. And that is what violates that property rights baseline of the Fourth Amendment.
But if he had just looked in the glove compartment without the drug sniffing dog, it would have been fine, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that is a correct statement of law. And I want to reiterate that these rules that govern the Fourth Amendment conduct of officers apply generally and have broad applicability. So if there's probable cause for one sort of evidence, you can't use that probable cause to then conduct a separate search and use a dog to basically expand the scope of that search.
But are you expanding the search when you're entitled to go into the glove compartment anyway?
I believe you're expanding the method of the search. I apologize for my language. The method of the search is far more intrusive and unreasonable. It's the use of the drug sniffing dog.
I mean, I think the Fourth Amendment, our Fourth Amendment jurisprudence discusses either probable cause for a search or no probable cause for a search. What's the authority that Fourth Amendment prohibits a particular means of conducting a search once you cross a probable cause threshold?
Your Honor, I believe the means, the authority for that, I believe is State v. Jones and the Shoup case. I believe, Your Honor, with that, this record doesn't reflect that he had probable cause that there were drugs within the vehicle because the dog never alerted. Now I understand,
but do you have to have probable cause that there are drugs, or do you have to have probable cause that there's criminal activity in a particular place?
Your Honor, I believe the standard is you have to have probable cause of drug-related criminal activity. And in this case, it was unreasonable to believe there was probable cause there because they had already conducted a search earlier that day and found no drugs in the glove compartment.
Okay, so what if you have a search warrant of a house, right? And it's on a suspicion of a murder, right? And the officers go to the house and they bring their dog with them, and it's a drug sniffing dog. And they get a search warrant and they go into a house based on probable cause to search for a murder or evidence of a murder. And they've got the dog with them and the dog finds drugs in the house. Are you saying that that would be an invalid search because they didn't have probable cause to search for drugs, even though they had probable cause to get into the house based on a magistrate's order?
Your Honor, that is exactly my point. I do not believe that if there is a probable cause for murder, that there's any reason that an officer should take a drug sniffing dog within the bounds of that person's house. I believe that's exactly our point.
Any authority that would support that proposition, counsel?
I would point the court to State v. Jones in the Shoup case, which require that property, property rights be respected in the context of the Fourth Amendment. And I don't believe this is an interesting question because I don't believe this has ever been necessarily addressed by this particular issue. But to me, Your Honor, the unreasonableness stems from the use of this drug sniffing dog to search for evidence that's unrelated to the justification for the search in the first place.
Mr. De Leon, on that point, as I understand, the judge did not make a finding because it was not asked to. That goes to, I think, Judge Frisch's initial question to you, that it wasn't raised specifically that there's a requirement of probable cause. And so as I read the order, the judge used the Wiegand standard, the articulable reasonable suspicion of drug related as the basis to use the dog, and then apparently didn't find credible the outside the car actions of the dog, because the judge made findings directly of what the dog did in the car. My question to you is this, in a broader, what additional facts would do you believe could have been derived if it had been properly raised below? And I'm focusing on the state. You can answer for the state. In other words, how do you see prejudice or lack of prejudice by failing to specifically raise the probable cause issue?
Your Honor, to answer your question, I believe the main fact that would have been elicited would have been evidence of an alert outside the exterior of the vehicle. To the extent that I...
Is that because you believe the state would concede they would need probable cause and wouldn't have it, but they didn't need it because it alerted before getting in?
Precisely, Your Honor. I believe if I'm understanding your statement correctly, the state lacked probable cause because there was no alert outside the vehicle that would then supply the justification for the dog to enter the vehicle.
Counsel, I see that your time has expired. Is there anything else from the panel this morning? All right, thank you very much. Okay, thank you very much, counsel. You'll have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it. Thank you. Counsel.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court and counsel. My name is Lindsay Lindstrom, and I represent the respondent in this matter, the state of Minnesota. And Your Honors, the state would submit that the district court sufficiently found that there was probable cause to search the vehicle based on the alcohol bottle located in the vehicle, that additionally the trooper also had independent, reasonable, articulable suspicion in order to conduct the dog sniff, which led to additional probable cause to search the vehicle. And in listening to appellant's arguments, I think appellant is conflating a bit the heightened standard of probable cause with the lower threshold for reasonable articulable suspicion for the dog sniff. There's multiple references to the trooper needing probable cause in order to conduct the dog sniff. But it's the state's position that this is a situation where there were multiple tracks. The investigations do not always happen in a linear fashion. Trooper Otterson immediately had developed probable cause to search the vehicle, including the glove box, for the alcohol. But he also has, based on his training and experience, developed the other reasonable articulable suspicion of drug-related activity prior to conducting the search. But he had already determined he was going to search for the alcohol. Appellant counsel mentioned at the point in the video where the Mille Lacs tribal investigator arrived at, I think it was 1320, and they discussed the other information and how the trooper had said, yeah, I've already seen alcohol, I'm going to search the vehicle. Investigator Gaboy gave some additional information that increased the trooper's already formed suspicion of drug-related activity, and gave him the additional information that increased the reasonable suspicion to conduct a dog sniff as well. Had the trooper simply gone in the glove box first and not used his state asset to do a dog sniff, maybe we wouldn't be here. But that probable cause was already developed for the alcohol prior to.
So I think an unsettled proposition of law in Minnesota is when the dog gets into the vehicle, does it need probable cause, or are we still in reasonable articulable suspicion land? And we have a few unpublished cases that talk about that proposition without resolving it. Do you want to weigh in on that, counsel?
Well, and Your Honor, I initially would say that the court does not need to decide that here. There was testimony both on direct and cross, albeit limited, since that issue wasn't raised in the motion, that the dog did alert outside of the vehicle.
I'll just say that I didn't see that in the video, but I'm obviously not a trained law enforcement personnel with a canine unit. So what it's not readily apparent from the video that the dog alerted.
And I would agree, it can certainly, the video can be interpreted that way. In reviewing the video again for today, I personally observed a reflection of before the trooper and the canine enter into the actual front squad video, the reflection of the dog in the, what is it, the rear passenger side, where the dog seems to be going in the direction of the open door and then is moved into the frame toward the rear of the vehicle where the sniff begins. So the dog, you know, that was consistent with what the trooper had testified to. And in prior, I've had cases where this was actually brought up with this particular trooper, and the trooper has testified at length the difference between alerts and indicators, changing behaviors, changing break and search pattern, increased respirations, desire to the dog's desire to enter the vehicle, stiffen back, wagging tail, how they work the odor. All of that would have been elicited had this issue been raised. But there is the brief testimony from the trooper that the dog did alert outside of the vehicle, if that answers the question.
Can I follow up on that, Ms. Lindstrom? Did Mr. De Leon answer correctly for the state? I was somewhat surmising that a part of the reason for our case law not to consider an issue not raised is if there's going to be there could be an extrapolation of additional facts. Is that kind of what you're getting at there? Is the state's position you would have, because it's close enough call, the judge jumped to whatever was the dog alerted to in the car. So what we can take from that is a little hard to tell, except that if the video is a little unclear on its face. So is your point that those facts could have been elicited to show the alert more clearly on the outside, which then does provide probable cause to allow the dog to go then inside?
Precisely that. And I've also worked with a particular defense attorney in this case. And when the issue has been brought up, it has been brought up clearly. And there has been quite a bit of testimony elicited from the dog handler in those instances. And here it was not clearly noticed other than a single question that I would interpret as an attempt to impeach the trooper in his testimony about, well, the video doesn't appear that way. There was no other additional questioning on whether the dog really alerted and how the alert was conducted outside of the vehicle. It wasn't brought up in the brief by appellant's district court attorney. The state didn't address that. However, there is the testimony, although the state would submit that it's not necessary to delve into that arena since there was probable cause to get into the car originally by the alcohol. But either way, that there were facts sufficient to find that the dog did alert prior to getting into the car, which does then support probable cause to get into the vehicle for the search for drugs.
How much of the vehicle does the law allow the search? I mean, can the officers start tearing apart the compartments of the car to look for alcohol, or go to the trunk where the passengers or the driver cannot access the alcohol? How extensive is that reach?
Well, for here, for alcohol, the passenger compartment, because that's where the illegality would stem from, is having it being either possessed or used in the passenger compartment. Anything large enough that could fit, I would say, a small bottle of alcohol is alcohol.
And what do we make of the defendant's, of Mr. Gomez's assertion of his privacy rights, specifically over the glove box, the reaching over and locking of the box and saying, you can't get in there without a warrant? What do we make of that? Because I'm concerned about his assertion of his property rights and sort of a, I'm going to get in there anyway.
Well, prior to Mr. Gomez locking the glove box, he was told, I'm searching the car, I'm going to go everywhere. Mr. Gomez could have just done nothing. Instead, he disregarded the trooper's directive to Mr. Gomez was take your keys out of your glove, the ignition, put them on the dash. And instead of doing that, he disregarded the trooper's directive, reached across, locked the glove box, made comments about you're not going in there, and then put it in his pocket. The trooper had already had the probable cause to go in the vehicle. And I would submit that doing something additional is just going to direct, well, this is where I'm going to search first, because that's most likely where I'm going to find the items. But the trooper had already known that that appellant was suspected of the drug dealing on the Mille Lacs Indian Reservation, that he saw the additional information evidence in the vehicle. He noted the baton weapon right away. And then prior to bringing out the dog, he also had that additional information from Investigator Gadboy before the dog.
As I look at the record, even though we spend a lot of time talking about the bottle of alcohol, it strikes me as largely irrelevant. And the reason I say that is it seems the testimony of the trooper for why he was in that location, what he knew about the appellant, what he learned from his observations of his eyes, just talking to him and so forth. And then talking to the investigator from the tribe, and then fairly quickly getting the dog. It does strike me that from the beginning, the totality of the concern to the trooper is drug-related activity. My question to you is, if that bottle was never shown, would the results still be the same from your standpoint, or should be the same? Could have been the same?
I would submit, yes, that the trooper was lawfully in that area. He had observed, he'd been in the area before. He had personally made drug arrests in that area, was aware of the drug crimes in the Mille Lacs Reservation. This is obviously he's a canine handler, so drug investigations are going to be his bread and butter. And when he pulls up to the vehicle, he knows the appellant, he knows his history, and what he starts to observe in the vehicle supports a reasonable suspicion of drug-related activity. And then he'd already seen the bottle, though, so I don't know that we can really dissect and pull out the additional, well, I'm asking you to come out of the vehicle because of the bottle. We didn't go on to it. That wasn't really addressed, right? I don't know that the record really would support that. I'm trying to not confuse the words, but the bottle was always part of the picture. So it was always going to be part of the testimony and the picture. So I'm not going to speculate as to how the testimony would have come out had the bottle not been there, but certainly the trooper had and was able to provide quite a bit of facts and circumstances and observations that legitimately support the lower threshold standard of the lower hurdle of a reasonable articulable suspicion of drugs. And the dog sniff is certainly less obtrusive and then a regular probable cause search of a vehicle.
Does it really matter?
Mr. DeLeon indicates that he feels that the method of the search is the key issue here. Do you agree with that proposition?
Well, I think the once again, this is a case that had more than one tract. So yes, bringing out had the only thing that Trooper Otterson seen in the vehicle was a bottle of alcohol, the dog would not have been appropriate. I would agree with that. I think the search needs to be tied to what the officer believes they could find or how they could find it. But now you already have the bottle of alcohol, but you also have all of the other indicators of drugs. So the dog is the way for drugs. Now, once had he just opened the door or had he just opened the glove box right away, that's where the drugs were, was inside of the passenger compartment, which would have been a legitimate place for him to search for alcohol.
Does it really
you agree that he could have just gone in the glove compartment and we wouldn't be here?
Absolutely.
Does it really matter what the officer said at the initial part of this of the stop? Because the reality is before he searched the vehicle, he accumulated a lot of additional information about this car, this what was going on in the glove box of this car, and the defendant before he ever entered into that car.
I don't think what the trooper says on the video when it comes to telling an individual, here's what I have. There's certainly no obligation for an officer to say everything they've seen and observed, and it's an investigation technique to not say everything. And I believe the district court judge did make reference to placing little importance on what the trooper actually said to the appellant, as there's, you know, a way of gaining a level of, I can't remember exactly the words, but it's an investigation technique. And so I don't think there's any obligation for a trooper to say exactly every single thing going through their mind, or to tell a suspect, here are all the things that I saw. And in this case, that's not an infirmity for the trooper to have not said those things out loud. And at this time, I don't see any other questions. So if the panel,
I'm just going to ask, does anybody have any additional questions?
No.
Ms. Lindstrom?
Then this concludes my presentation. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, counsel. We'll reset the clock. Mr. De Leon, you have 5 minutes for rebuttal if you choose to use it.
Yes. Thank you, Your Honor. Just to kind of a couple points based on opposing counsel's comments. Starting at the end, I think opposing counsel said that the district court found that we should place little importance on the comments that Trooper Otterson said to the appellant, but I would point out that the statements where he's indicating his motive for the search are being said directly to the other investigator, not to appellant directly. And to that point, the Varnado case and the Holmes case from the Minnesota Supreme Court are the key cases on that point to the fact that if you identify the motive for one search, so for example, if the motive here is for drugs, the search is invalid. The pretextual certain motive that you put forth, if you can establish that that motive was pretextual in nature, then the subsequent search, even if there is an adequate legal basis for it, is invalid.
Your point is well taken, counsel, that the officer did communicate with his other officer outside of the defendant's presence what the reason why he was going to conduct the search or what he was looking for. But the reality is that the totality of circumstances really was beefed up before he actually conducted the search. So why is it that the search would be invalid once the officer accumulates all that additional evidence?
Well, Your Honor, I believe part of the issue is that the district court relied erroneously on certain factors that were not supported by the dash cam footage. So for example, the trooper testifies that he noticed three cell phones, which are indicative of drug-related activity. But that information didn't become apparent to the officer until well after he'd already conducted the search. Similarly, there's no evidence that he recognized the wooden baton as a weapon until after the search as well. The only things that he really identifies is that he was nervous, that he refused consent to search the glove box, and that there was a butane lighter in plain view. To take those in turn, the nervousness is not a proper consideration in a probable cause determination under the State v. Burbach case from the Minnesota Supreme Court when conducting searches of vehicles. And refusal to consent to a search is also not a proper consideration under the Deed case. So then you're left primarily with the butane lighter, which this court has said standing alone is not an adequate justification or indication of drug-related criminal activity. So if you look at all—
What do you make of the footnote in the district court's order indicating that the officer testified to observing indicia of drug use? I know that the district court did state that it wasn't a large part of what the officer relied upon because it was only subtle, but it certainly wasn't discounted as a possibility that the officer did observe recent consumption of illegal substances in the defendant.
Your Honor, the district court's opinion says it doesn't find that particularly compelling to the point where the district court said if the officer believed that he was under the use of drugs, it was the officer should have conducted a field sobriety test and he did not. So I read that to say that the court did not take that factor into consideration in the list of factors supporting the probable cause for the search. Just to bring it back to the main issue, I believe it's this court's prerogative to look at all, independently review all of the facts that are presented before the court. And here the facts demonstrate that there was an underlying motive to search for drugs that was not related to the probable cause for supporting the search for open containers of alcohol. And that underlying motive, that the desire to hunt for drugs, is what renders this search invalid and unreasonable under the Fourth Amendment. You can't use justification to search for one type of evidence as a pretext to then search for additional unrelated types of evidence. And I believe that the district court erred in failing to recognize that fact.
All right, thank you very much, counsel. Your time has expired. Anything else from the panel? All right, very well. Thank you very much, counsel, for your arguments and your submissions. They were very well done. We'll take the matter under advisement, issue an opinion within the 90-day time period. And Mr. De Leon, thank you for your volunteer work on behalf of the Appellate Public Defender today.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you.